You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
Hi, I'm Christine, and I'd like to introduce you to the True Crime Files podcast, a bi-weekly podcast that focuses on mysterious disappearances and unsolved murders. Every 2 weeks, we'll be releasing an episode that'll help you get to know a case really well without having to invest a lot of your time. Derived from the articles up on the True Crime Files website, you'll find that our show covers a diversity of victims and perspectives. You'll probably also notice that our episodes are narrated by Scott Fuller from the Frozen Truth and Status Pending podcasts. Be sure to subscribe to the True Crime Files today so that you never miss an episode. Thanks so much for listening, being a part of our true crime community, and helping to shine a light on cases that might otherwise be overlooked or underreported.
All right. My name is Sam, and this is Haibu. So a little bit about me and a little bit about the podcast. It's pretty much just a space for us to talk about all the weird, unexplainable things that have happened in our lives and the lives of people that we know. I am by no means a professional ghost hunter or paranormal expert. However, your girl has had some weird stuff go down in my life. I just want to share that with you guys and talk about it and just pretty much give us a platform to open up the conversation to all things weird and otherwise unexplainable by logic or science or anything else. I don't judge. I hope you all don't judge me. I just want to make a safe space for us to share the stuff that maybe we're not comfortable talking about with anybody else. But I know that chances are you have a story, and I have quite a few stories that I'm really looking forward to sharing with you guys. Feel free to send stories anytime. You can email us at haibupodcast@gmail.com, or you can message us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at haibupodcast. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you. As fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone.
Ta-da!
We're back! So, welcome to episode 64 of the Forgotten News Podcast.
This is Jim. Hi.
Hello, listeners. This is Kit.
Hey, this is Jessica, and it's so good to be back.
However, we are very sorry that it took so long for us to release this episode.
Maybe our annual Christmas special just put all three of us in such a good mood that it was just really hard to get focused again.
Definitely. It's always such a good episode. It's a hard act to follow.
Well, yes, that is true. But I think I also noticed a technology problem just before we started. Hold on for a minute. I'm going to check on that. It will only take a second, so please just wait, and don't start without me. Yes, I found the problem. No wonder there was a delay. Oops. But I fixed it. So from here on out, we should be 100% back on track. However, in all seriousness, listeners, we definitely do apologize for our delay in recording and also releasing this episode.
Listeners, the truth is, we don't know what happened as far as why there was a delay. All I can say is, it just happened.
I don't know what else we can say. So, let's just move along, because we have a very exciting announcement that we are just bursting to share. So, drum roll, please. Listeners, as of this month, the Forgotten News podcast has reached a total of 150,000 downloads.
I can hardly believe it.
Yes, but it's true. And the thing is, this podcast is so niche that it's also kind of incredible.
However, it's not just numbers. We often get written feedback from listeners that underline these statistics. For example, I'm going to share with you a recent review from iTunes. Quote, "This podcast is not the type of thing I usually listen to. It has a different format and storytelling style than anything I've ever heard. But find the uniqueness, its strength. The topics are not what you hear all the time, and that's refreshing." Unquote.
And here's another review, also from iTunes. Quote, "Congrats on 5 years of podcasting. I started with the Mingo Kabiska episode and it blew my mind. I loved listening to the old-timey radio story. It was a great way to celebrate the podcast's 5th anniversary. I'll be binge listening to the back catalog now, for sure." Unquote.
Thank you, listeners, for all of your kind words about this show. But I think that is more than enough of patting ourselves on the back. Listeners, let's just get started with our featured story, which I'm sure is the main reason why you are listening.
Now, we usually begin with a short trigger warning to warn people about things in the featured story, things that might be upsetting or scary. However, in this story, we really don't think you are going to hear anything like that, but just to be on the safe side, we will give you a very short and simple advisory. Listeners, if you are of a nervous or sensitive disposition or get frightened easily, we advise you calmly but sincerely to simply turn off this episode now.
And with all of that having been said,
on with the show. Listeners, we are pretty sure that most of you have heard of the 1938 radio audio drama, The War of the Worlds, produced by the famous actor and director Orson Welles. In fact, we briefly mentioned this radio story on our Christmas episode. However, in case it has slipped your memory, this audio drama told the story of a violent invasion of the Earth by the planet Mars. Now, the main reason why this 1938 radio episode is still widely known in the present day is because the story was so realistically dramatized that millions of people thought it was really happening, or that it was some sort of live news program broadcasting the events as they happened. So, needless to say, many listeners were absolutely terrified. And as a result, Orson Welles was often described as an absolute genius of radio storytelling and drama. But he did not create the idea for a highly realistic audio drama entirely on his own. Welles later stated that he had been inspired by a previous audio drama produced in London, England, in January 1926 and broadcast over the radio by the British Broadcasting Company, more commonly known as the BBC. Now, at this point, the BBC was only 4 years old and was simply a small, privately owned radio station in London. It was not the large, governmentally operated radio network that it is today. And in 1926, the BBC mainly broadcast music programs, along with various random things such as health information, etiquette tips, and news bulletins. But this was obviously a time of experimentation in radio, and the BBC was very open to any ideas that might bring new listeners. So, when a man named Ronald Knox came to the BBC with an idea for a parody of a news broadcast, as if there were an outbreak of a revolution suddenly happening in London, they looked at the script he had written, and they quickly approved his proposal. Now, who was this man, Ronald Knox? Well, first of all, he was better known as Father Ronald Knox. He was a Catholic priest who had a wide variety of skills, hobbies, and other interests, as well as a very eccentric sense of humor. And during the first half of the 20th century, for various reasons, Father Knox became somewhat of a celebrity, and he remained one right up until his death in 1957. He wrote books and numerous articles on all sorts of topics, as well as several novels of crime fiction. They were all very popular. And in the winter of 1926, he somehow came up with the idea of broadcasting a fictionalized news program designed to sound as if reporters were describing events as they happened. Specifically, that the government in London was being overthrown by a spontaneous revolution. This radio drama was called Broadcasting the Barricades, and it was heard over the airwaves of the BBC on January 16, 1926, beginning at 7:40 p.m. The program began by interrupting an actual educational lecture, which caused many listeners, possibly most listeners, to think that the subsequent fictional news broadcast was real. In addition, the program included realistic sound effects of explosions, fires, and famous buildings crashing down, along with the reports of various politicians being hanged or roasted alive. And finally, even though the program began with a warning that the story was fiction, it seems that most people either didn't hear that or somehow forgot it. The program ended with an announcement that a crowd of rioters had surrounded the BBC offices and were attempting to break in. Then, the audio suddenly changed to music playing. The program ended as abruptly as it had started. As a result, many people were frightened by the events described in the broadcast and locked their doors. But possibly the most unusual aspect of this story is the fact that very few people know about it in the present day compared to the 1938 War of the Worlds radio program. Although that might be because a recording of the 1938 broadcast still exists, and in very good condition, versus the fact that there is no audio of the 1926 radio drama. Only the script still exists. And finally, just so you know that we aren't exaggerating the impact of the 1926 radio program at the time, we will now wrap up our featured story with the following newspaper article, published the next day, which describes the aftermath of the broadcast.
London, January 17th, 1926. Great excitement and fear were caused here, and in all parts of Great Britain and Ireland last evening, when radio listeners, by a comedy of errors, heard on the air an announcement that a revolution had broken out in London. Among other things, they were told that the National Gallery had been laid in ruins by an army of unemployed workers, that the Savoy Hotel had been blown sky high, that the interior of the House of Commons had been bombed, and that there had been a massacre of people in St. James's Park. A realistic touch was given to the terrifying details by sounds like those of distant explosions, the noise of terror-stricken crowds, and the crash of falling buildings. The listeners spread this news, and soon the newspaper offices everywhere were bombarded with telephone calls from people anxious to get further details. Those offices were kept busy all day today, reassuring frightened inquiries. For the rumours were still circulating in country towns and villages, and the fact that bad weather delayed the arrival of the morning newspapers was taken by many persons as confirmation that the worst had happened. It was learned later that Father Ronald Knox had been broadcasting a series of false satirical news items from the Edinburgh wireless station, and it seems that many in the radio audience had failed to tune in soon enough to hear a preliminary announcement that the stories should not be taken seriously. But the British Broadcasting Company is being severely criticised for what is being described as a bad joke. Sir Leo Chiozzomani was asked his opinion about it. He replied,
"I should not have made a worse joke if I had rung you up on the telephone and announced that I had murdered my grandmother."
The British Broadcasting Company felt it necessary to issue an explanation to the public.
"We regret that any listeners had been perturbed by this purely fantastical picture. However, a warning had been given that the entertainment was not to be taken seriously."
In addition, Father Knox's comedic news bulletin was given with so many touches of humour that it seems incredible that it could have been taken seriously. Nevertheless, it was reported that one woman had fainted when she heard it.
Well, everyone, now you've heard the story of the 1926 BBC radio panic.
We hope you think that this story was a good start for our podcast in 2023.
It's definitely a story that you'd be unlikely to hear anywhere else. And we think this is the first of a lot of really great stories in the pipeline for this year.
And with all of that having been said, we will now move on.
But first, we want to thank our excellent guest narrator and guest voices. So please come up to the microphone, take a bow, and tell our listeners anything that you want them to know about you.
Hello, my name is Andrea Richardson, and I'm a British actor and singer. As well as stage acting, I've been voice acting for nearly 10 years, and I do audio drama, narration, podcasts, and everything in between. If you would like to use me on future projects, please find my showreel on mandy.com and search for Andrea Richardson, or email me at andrea.sings@btinternet.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Dante Barber. I'm a voice actor from Las Vegas, Nevada. If you are interested in hearing some more of my voice work, you can find that on my SoundCloud. So that's soundcloud.com/repa66. That's REAPA and then the number 66. And if you are interested in having me as a performer on any of your projects, you can contact me at my email address. That's D'Angelo246, so D'Angelo246@hotmail.com. Thank you very much, and I look forward to any and all voice performance inquiries.
Hi, this is Jerry Kokich. I'm a voice actor, and I'm always working on my craft. You can contact me at 310-403-4463 or my email at jerrykokich@yahoo.com.
Hey, you did a great job, all of you. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely wonderful.
Thanks so much. You did a wonderful job.
Many thanks.
Now, listeners, we were originally planning on returning our regular segment, Police Blotter and Court News, since we were kind of intermittent last year rather than regular in presenting that segment. But we decided, or should I say Jim decided, to kick off the year with something else and return Police Blotter on our next episode. So, in keeping with the old-time radio theme on this episode, we are going to present a story from a 1950 radio program called Somebody Knows. Listeners, we have occasionally featured true crime stories from this CBS radio show over the past few years, and now, on this episode of our podcast, we are going to feature the story of the 1948 unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern in Los Angeles, California, as told on the January 6th, 1950 episode of Somebody Knows. So, here is the story, complete and uncut.
Ladies and gentlemen, a $5,000 reward will be offered each week on the program immediately following this announcement.
You out there, you who think you've committed the perfect crime, the perfect murder, that there are no clues, no witnesses, that your identity is unknown. Listen.
Somebody knows.
Yes, you, wherever you may be, no matter where you're hiding, somewhere, sometime, someone listening to this program is going to bring you to justice. Yes.
Somebody knows.
The Columbia Broadcasting System presents Somebody Knows, a program conceived in the public interest, dedicated to aiding the forces of law and order in the solution of this nation's unsolved crimes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to recreate for you tonight all the known facts in an actual unsolved murder. Somewhere, someone among you has had contact with the killer or killers. Someone whose identity need never be known has seen evidence or possesses information that can lead to the solution of this crime.
In the public interest, the Columbia Broadcasting System offers a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the killer in this unsolved murder.
We ask you then to please listen carefully, for you may be the one to win this reward.
Somebody knows.
It may be you. And now we open the files on one of this nation's unsolved murders. It's homicide file number DR75-4613 of the Los Angeles, California Police Department. The unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern. It is St. Valentine's Day, Saturday, February 14th, 1948. The time is between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The place, the exclusive Los Feliz residential section in the hills high above the city of Los Angeles, California. A real estate agent is showing a prospective buyer through a vacant home at 4217 Cromwell Avenue.
Now, here's the dining room. As you can see, it's designed for good, homey, comfortable living and yet large enough to accommodate a good-sized dinner party. And this way is the kitchen. Now, maybe as a man, you aren't interested in what makes a kitchen practical. But if you're like my husband, you're certainly interested in what comes out of it. So I'd just like to point out a few of... What's the matter? Why are you looking at me that... That knife. What are you doing with that knife? No, no, you can't. You... No!
On Sunday morning, February 15th, 1948, a red light winks on a switchboard in the Los Angeles Police Department.
Missing Persons Bureau.
Hello? Is this where you report a missing person?
That's right, sir.
Well, my name is Jack Kern. It's my mother. She... Well, ever since yesterday, we haven't any idea what happened to her.
I see. What's your mother's name, Mr. Kern?
Mrs. Gladys Kern.
Mrs. Gladys Kern.
Yes, sir.
And the address?
6200 Roy Street in Highland Park.
6200 Roy Street, Highland Park. Now, if you give me a detailed description of her, the apartment you have.
At about the same moment that Mrs. Gladys Kern is being reported missing, a sergeant enters an office in the homicide division.
Say, here's something you might be interested in, Lieutenant.
Oh? What is it, Sergeant?
A note, anonymous. It was picked up in a mailbox at 5th and Olive. Looks like it might be something for homicide.
Has the crime lab seen it?
Just got through with it. He said bring it down here.
All right, let's see what it says.
The note is written on a plain piece of paper folded over. On the outside, penciled in large scrawling letters, are three words. Hurry to police. The body of the note, also printed in clumsy penciled letters, is alliteratively phrased, badly spelled and unpunctuated.
It says, I made acquaintance of man 3 weeks ago. He said he wanted to buy a home for his family, but he was a racketeer.
No real estater would do business with him. He suggested I buy a home for him in my name, and then he would go with me to look at the property to make sure he liked it. They went into the house, and I waited outside. After a while, I went up to investigate. She was laying on the floor. I turned her over. I was covered with blood. I pulled a knife out of her, then I left and ran. I knew this man as Lewis Fraser. He's about 5'10", has jet black curly hair, wears blue or tan gabardine suits. He told me he was a fighter, and he looks it. I won't rest till I find him, because I know that man is my only alibi.
Without him, I feel equally guilty.
And what do you think, Lieutenant? A crank?
I doubt it, Sergeant. I think this man has described an actual crime.
Monday morning, February 16th, 1948, Mr. Fred Lyon, a realtor with offices at 2144 Hillhurst Avenue, is showing homes to two women prospects, one of whom is Mrs. Verdie F. Cross, a trained nurse. One of the homes on his list is located at 4217 Cromwell Avenue in the Los Feliz Hills. At the moment, Mr. Lyon and the two women are looking over the grounds at the Cromwell Avenue address.
And as you can see, ladies, the property's been well kept up. Jonas spared no pains to maintain his home in keeping with the section. Personally, I feel that at $25,000, the property's very sound value.
The two women and Mr. Lyon leave the grounds and enter the service porch. They walk slowly toward the kitchen door. Then, as they're about to enter the kitchen...
What is it?
What's the matter, dear? There, on the kitchen floor. Look through that open door.
Good Lord.
Wait a minute. Stay here.
Mrs. Verity F. Cross, the nurse, walks a few feet into the kitchen. She stands there a moment, looking down. Then comes back to Mr. Lyon and the other woman.
You needn't go any further. That woman is dead.
A few minutes later, in the police communication division, a monitor on a police complaint switchboard plugs in to answer a call.
Los Angeles Police Department, complaint division. You're certain the woman's dead? All right, what's the address? 4217 Cromwell Avenue. And your name? Mr. Fred Lyon. Who's with you, Mr. Lyon? Very well, sir. Go back to the house. Don't touch anything. You and the two women...
As the monitor talks to Mr. Lyon over the telephone, he plugs in the homicide division switchboard on the same line. Simultaneously, he writes the pertinent information on a form, rips it from its pad, and places it on an endless chain conveyor belt that carries it into the next room. The next room is the broadcasting room of KGPL, official radio station of police communications. The dispatcher takes the slip and hands it to one of the seven broadcasters sitting fan-shaped around him. She looks it over quickly and presses a button on the microphone before her.
Code 2, a dead body at 4217 Cromwell Avenue. Code 2, a dead body at 4217 Cromwell Avenue. Cars 301 and 115 acknowledged.
Within a matter of minutes after the flash is given, Detective A.W. Hubka arrives on the scene. His official report, as given to the Homicide Division and later at the coroner's inquest, contains in part the following information.
In response to the Code 2 broadcast, I proceeded at once to the home at 4217 Cromwell Avenue. In the kitchen, I found the body of an attractively dressed woman lying face down on the floor. My examination satisfied me that she was dead. There was a deep wound in her back between the shoulder blades. Obviously, a knife wound. In the kitchen sink, I found a leather-handled hunting knife with a blade of about 6 inches in length. An attempt had been made to wash it clean, though some traces of bloodstains still remained. Also in the sink was a man's balled-up handkerchief, which bore stains that I presumed to be blood. Beside the body lay an open purse and a wallet. Within a short time, a detail arrived from homicide.
Shortly after the discovery of the murder, information is correlated between the Missing Persons Bureau and the Homicide Division. A police car speeds to Highland Park and picks up Mr. John E. Kern, husband of Mrs. Gladys Kern, reported missing the day before. It takes him to 4217 Cromwell Avenue. A police officer leads the tense, anxious man toward the kitchen.
This way, please, Mr. Kern. Body is here in the kitchen.
Gladys. Gladys. Dear God. It's my wife, Gladys. My wife. My wife.
In just a moment, we'll continue with file number DR75-4613 of the Los Angeles, California Police Department. The unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern.
CBS invites you to hear another adventure in the far corners of the world with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, later tonight. Starring Hollywood actor Edmund O'Brien, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, brings you the adventures of a top investigator for a large insurance company. Old hands who think they have a new twist and new hands who think they have a novel twist try to swindle Johnny Dollar's company, and Johnny has to keep one step ahead. For action, thrills, and adventure in the far places, listen to yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Edmund O'Brien, every Thursday on most of these same CBS stations.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue with the rest of the factual information concerning the unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern.
Remember, $5,000 reward will be paid for information leading to the arrest and conviction of her killer.
The establishment of the identity of the body at 4217 Cromwell Avenue as that of Mrs. Gladys Kern, all the resources of the Los Angeles, California Police Department swing into action in an effort to apprehend her killer. Detective Captain Burt Jones, Hollywood Division, is placed in charge of the investigation. The coroner's inquest is held at 1:30 p.m. Friday, February 21st, 1948. Deputy Coroner Edwin Lennox is presiding. The first witness to be called is Mr. John E. Kern, the dead woman's husband.
Now, Mr. Kern, we'll try to make this as brief as possible for you. Would you tell us, please, if you know of anyone who could possibly have any reason for doing harm to your wife? Will you talk into that hand microphone, please, so that we can all hear you? Go right ahead, please.
My wife had absolutely no enemies that I know of. There was no reason why anyone should want to kill her.
I see. When was the last time you saw her, Mr. Kern?
Last time I saw her alive was about 5:30 Saturday morning when I left for work.
Would you please tell us, in your own words, all that you can remember of your wife's activities on that day?
Well, Gladys was up before dawn to fix my breakfast. She always did.
I see.
She was a good wife.
Go on, please.
I left for work about 5:30, returned home about 4:30 that afternoon.
Was your wife at home then, Mr. Kern?
No, sir. She'd left a note for me. It was to remind me that we were going to a wedding.
While waiting for his wife to return that night, Mr. Kern took a little nap. It was some time later that the doorbell rang.
Oh, the doorbell. It must be Gladys.
Hi, Dad.
Hello, Father.
Hello, kids. Come in.
We've come to take you to the wedding, Dad. Where's Mom?
Guess she's not home yet, Peggy.
Oh, that's too bad. We thought we'd all go together.
Well, you know how your mother is, Jack. She's got a client on the string.
I know. She's liable to come home at all hours.
Look, you two kids run along. I'll wait for her. We'll show up later.
Still sweethearts, eh, Dad? Can't move one step without the other. Well, I guess that's okay, this being St. Valentine's Day, but don't be late. This is going to be a night for the Kerns to howl. Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Kern, what did you do after your children left?
Well, I wasn't worried about Gladys, as I'd told the kids. She was very often kept late closing a deal, so I lay down again. It was Sunday morning before I woke up.
Mrs. Kern hadn't come home, of course.
No, sir. I was really scared then. I called the kids right away, and they hadn't heard from her either. Jack called the Missing Persons Bureau. We phoned everyone we could think of, and, well, then we just waited. Waited.
Meanwhile, the reports on preliminary investigation in the case are discouraging. Detective Captain Jones has only this information to offer.
murder weapon, the leather-handled K-bar hunting knife, is the type widely sold in war surplus stores. A check has been made of each such store in the city without any concrete results. We are also urging the anonymous letter writer through the radio and press to turn himself in, work with the police. No response has been forthcoming to date.
Chemist Ray Pinker of the Police Crime Laboratory has this to report.
Mrs. Kern's purse of a black plastic material would hold no fingerprints unless applied by wet or blood-covered fingers. We found none. Nor were there any prints in the wallet or the murder weapon. The anonymous note had passed through too many hands to provide us with anything of value.
Then, finally, comes the first break in the case. A witness is found who saw Mrs. Kern on that fateful Saturday in the company of a strange man. The witness, Mrs. Mary Johnson, manager of a drugstore at North Vermont and Fountain Avenues.
Why, yes, yes, officer. I saw Mrs. Kern on St. Valentine's Day. She came in here real often. Her real estate office is only a few doors away, you know, at 13007 North Vermont. Well, it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd say, that she came in. Oh, I was busy back here at the drug counter, so I didn't really pay much attention. But I did notice that there was a man with her. He was... What? Oh, no, I'd never seen him before. None of the others had either. They sat at the soda fountain and talked for a while, and well, then they left. That was the last time I ever saw poor Mrs. Kern. The man? Well, as near as I can recall, he was of medium build. He wore a dark blue suit. Yes, I remember now. He had very dark hair. Yes, very dark hair.
Blue suit, very dark hair. What was it that anonymous note had said?
I know this man is Louis Fraser. He's about 5'10", has jet black curly hair. Wears a blue or tan gabardine suit.
Then, 2 weeks later in Long Beach, California, just a few miles away, another event takes place that finds its way into the file on Mrs. Gladys Kern. In a real estate office at 4591 Banner Street, Mrs. Jacques Landis is sitting at her desk checking property listings when the door opens.
Hello there.
Hi. You got any houses for sale?
Should say we have. What kind of a house were you looking for?
I'm not particular. Nobody else in the office?
Not at the moment, no, but I have all the listings. If you could give me some idea of...
Does this give you some idea, lady?
That knife? What are you doing with that knife?
You just keep your mouth shut. I ain't gonna do nothing with it. If you don't, I'll... All right, now. Let me have that purse. Quick, now.
Yes. Of course. Here.
Okay. Now, you just sit there and keep that mouth shut. You better not do anything for 5 minutes. Or I'll come back and I'm going to take care of you. So long. Thanks.
Oh, answer. Oh, please answer. Operator, get me the police. Hurry, get me the police.
Now the pattern begins to grow clearer. Another real estate woman has been threatened and robbed by a prospective home buyer carrying a hunting knife. And now there's a more detailed description. A description that fits into the same general pattern that the police have been building.
Attention all police officers. Wanted for questioning in the murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern, this man. Description follows. 23 to 26 years of age. 5'7" to 10" tall, handsome, has black wavy hair neatly combed, eyes dark brown, close set, smooth shaven, features sharp, has Midwestern accent, may be dressed in blue gabardine slacks and a greenish blue zipper jacket or a pinstripe suit, may be driving a 1939 Chevrolet coupe or a dark gray 1940 Dodge or Plymouth sedan. Will repeat, wanted for questioning.
Now the police receive two more important bits of information. The first comes from Mr. William Osborne, a physicist who maintains offices in the rear of Mrs. Kern's realty office on Vermont Avenue.
At about 4 o'clock the afternoon of Saturday, February 14th, I happened to notice Mrs. Kern go into a real estate office with a man. He was in his 50s, about 6 feet tall, weighed probably, 200 pounds. His hair was graying and his face was... well, I would say rather lean. He had a New York appearance in his manner and his dress. He and Mrs. Kern were talking and joking, and they left shortly after they'd come in. I'd never seen the man before, and I never saw him again.
The second bit of information, undoubtedly one of the most important clues in the entire case, came from Mrs. Peggy Ann Phillips, young married daughter of Mrs. Kern.
When I was graduated from school, my brother Jack gave me a diamond wristwatch as a present. A short time before the day, before St. Valentine's Day, my mother took her watch to a jeweler for repair, and I gave her mine to wear meanwhile. She was wearing my watch on the day she was... on St. Valentine's Day. When the police found her, the watch was gone. Oh, excuse me, please. My baby's crying. He loved his grandmother. Not... I'm sure he knows he's never going to see her again.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've now given you all available information as contained in the files of the Los Angeles, California Police Department regarding the unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern. On the basis of that information, the coroner's jury said,
"We find the death of Mrs. Gladys Kern to be a homicide at the hands of person or persons unknown."
Person or persons unknown? No. The killer of Mrs. Kern is not unknown. Somewhere in whatever town or city this man is hiding, some one of you has seen him today, has spoken to him, eaten lunch and dinner with him, driven in the same car that he used on the day of the murder. No, the cold-blooded killer who took Mrs. Kern's life is not a person who is unknown.
Somebody knows.
Now listen carefully, please. Listen, all of you, wherever you may be. We're going to give you a recapitulation of all the known facts in the unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern. Better make a note of them.
And remember, by following the instructions we shall give you in a moment, you may be the one to earn a $5,000 reward.
Now, here are the actual facts in the case. Mrs. Gladys Kern, 42 years of age, a realtor with offices at 1307 North Vermont Avenue in Los Angeles, California, was stabbed to death with a hunting knife in a vacant home at 4217 Cromwell Avenue in that city.
The date? Saturday, St. Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1948. The time? Between 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
The motive was obviously robbery. Only a few pennies were found in a rifled purse. And a diamond-studded wristwatch she'd been wearing was missing. The police have descriptions of two men whom they're seeking as suspects in this crime. Here's a description of the first man.
His age between 23 and 26. 5'7" to 10" tall. Handsome. Wavy black hair, neatly combed. Eyes, dark brown, close set. Sharp features, smooth shaven. Has a Midwestern accent.
And please remember that this man seems to have a preference for blue or tan gabardine suits. Now, here's the description of the second man seen with Mrs. Kern on the day of her death.
Age, in his 50s, about 6 feet tall, weight, about 200 pounds, hair, turning gray, face, rather lean, has what is described as a New York appearance in his manner and dress.
Now, the clue most likely to trap the man we're looking for is a diamond-studded wristwatch. Here's the description. Listen carefully, please.
The watch is a Bulova. The case is yellow gold with a two-tone overlay of platinum. On each side, there are two or three diamond chips. The hands are black, spade type. The figures, Arabic on a white dial. The face opening of the watch is slightly oblong.
And most important of all, on the back of the watch is this inscription.
Peggy Ann, 6-1944.
Let me repeat that, please. On the back of the watch is inscribed the name Peggy Ann and the figures 6-1944. Ladies and gentlemen, if any of you possesses information that may have bearing on the unsolved murder of Mrs. Gladys Kern, please follow these instructions so that your name and identity need never be made known unless you wish. Now listen carefully.
Write your information on a plain sheet of paper. Do not sign your name. Instead, sign it with six numbers, any arrangement of any six numbers. Then tear off a blank corner of that paper with a ragged edge. Write the same six numbers on that corner and keep it. Mail the rest of the paper with the information to Somebody Knows, Hollywood, California. You need tell no one what you have done, nor will you have to appear in person.
If the information you've supplied leads to the arrest and conviction of the killer of Gladys Kern, we'll announce your signature number on this program. Then, if you don't want your name to be known, go to your lawyer or doctor, your priest, minister, or rabbi, and have him present the torn corner of the paper to any CBS station. In this way, you won't have to appear in person.
If the torn corner matches the original paper containing the information, the $5,000 reward will be yours.
Remember, you, wherever you are, you whose name need never be known, you may earn a reward of $5,000.
Next week, at the same time, we'll present another true case history of unsolved murder.
You out there, you who've murdered in cold blood and think you've gotten away with it, listen. You cannot escape. There is no perfect crime. Remember, you are not unknown.
Somebody knows.
Tonight's case was written by Sidney Marshall from information in the files of the Los Angeles, California Police Department. Research was by Maurice Zim. Music was composed and played by Milton Charles. Somebody Knows is a James L. Safier production in association with CBS by arrangement with the Chicago Sun-Times and is based on a copyright owned by W.L. Finstad. It was narrated and directed by Jack Johnstone. In order to be eligible for the reward, letters containing information leading to the arrest and conviction of the killer or killers of Mrs. Gladys Kern must be postmarked not later than midnight, July 26, 1950. Arrest of the guilty person or persons must occur within 90 days of that date, and conviction must be within 1 year of tonight's broadcast. If more than one person gives the information leading to conviction, our judges will divide the $5,000 reward among them in proportion to the importance the judges attach to the facts supplied. And in this, the decision of our judges will be final. Until next Thursday at the same time, this is Frank Goss saying goodnight for
Somebody Knows.
And that brings us to the end of the July 6th, 1950 episode of Somebody Knows, as broadcast on the CBS Radio Network, with the story of the unsolved murder of Gladys Kern. We hope that it was an interesting experience for you.
But remember, there is no statute of limitations on murder.
So, if by any incredible miracle you happen to know the identity of the killer or any other information that might be helpful, please call the Los Angeles Police Department Cold Case Unit. The phone number is 213-486-6810. We will now move on to our recommendations and advice segment. We will each take a few moments to mention something that we think our listeners might be interested in hearing about or knowing about. It might be a book, a movie, a TV show, a podcast, an app, a food, a game, a recipe, a store, a product, a life hack, or who knows? It will always be something different. By the way, we want our listeners to know that we do not synchronize or discuss our comments or suggestions in regard to this segment before we record. That way, it's always a surprise for the listeners and for us. Now, on this episode, Jim will go first, then Jessica, and finally, moi.
My recommendation is going to be a television program. Specifically, the TV show Abbott Elementary. You can watch it on your local ABC station or on Hulu. This is a program that revolves around an inner-city elementary school that is poorly funded and is stuck with an incompetent principal. The teachers all have their own ideas about the best way to teach students, and they are wildly different from each other. The episodes are a half hour long, and the comedy mainly comes from the clash of these teachers' different ways and attitudes. I need to admit that When I saw the first episode, I didn't like this show. It didn't make me laugh. It actually made me feel depressed. But when I'd express that opinion, people would say, no, give it another try, because the episodes after that are really funny. So that's what I did. And I will tell you, it's a really well-written, really good, really funny show, even when it deals with serious educational issues. And for that same reason, this show is getting a lot of recognition and awards. So my recommendation is that you watch Abbott Elementary on the ABC television network or on Hulu. And for this episode, that's the end of my recommendation.
Hey everyone, it's Jessica, and I sort of have a two-for-one recommendation this week. If you're a child of the 90s and enjoy hibernating in the winter, might I recommend Pod Meets World, which is the rewatch podcast of Boy Meets World, hosted by Danielle Fishel, Ryder Strong, and Will Friedle. I have been listening to this podcast and rewatching the episodes along with it, and I gotta tell you, it's really fun. I'm enjoying the nostalgia. Boy Meets World is a very feel-good show, and it just takes me back to a simpler time. TGIF, take me away. Am I right, guys? In addition, I've also been listening to a podcast called The Rewatcher. These are the hosts of Morbid, Elena and Ash, who are rewatching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And again, if you're a child of the 90s, this is nostalgia. It's just heavenly. Oh, that's my dog barking in the background. Let's leave that in. I also recommend dogs. That'll be my third recommendation. Thanks for listening. And if you give these podcasts a listen, or if you're rewatching any of these shows, drop me a line and let me know.
So for this episode, I'm going to recommend Hell's Kitchen. I know. Most of you are probably like, where have you been? Like, I just started watching this probably 2 years ago. I have never been into cooking, and I don't cook. And I have a really bland palate. But it's a good show to watch. I don't cook, but I love Hell's Kitchen. And there's a lot of drama. It's really great. Gordon Ramsay is, he's a force to be reckoned with. He really is. Okay, that's my recommendation. Go watch it.
And that is the end of the recommendation and advice segment for this episode.
Listeners, if you have a suggestion for something that you would like us to mention on this segment, just send us an email, and if it's a good recommendation, we'll pass it along to our audience.
And thank you in advance for doing that.
Now, moving along, we will once again ask you, our lovely listeners, to take a moment when this episode is over and go to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, then rate, review, and subscribe to the Forgotten News podcast.
But 5-star reviews only, please, because it definitely helps to bring new listeners and gives us a bump in the rankings.
And listeners, we mean that. Please, 5-star ratings only.
Next, if you have any thoughts or opinions about this episode, or any prior episode, or any suggestions about the show, just send an email to forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com. We always like hearing from our listeners.
We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Just type Forgotten News Podcast in the search box, and you'll find us. By the way, if you'd like to contact me personally, I can be reached on Twitter or Facebook.
Well, I'm going to interrupt for a split second just to say that it's a little tricky to find Kit Karen on Facebook because there are like a zillion people with names that are similar in one way or another. So what we will do is we will include a link to her Facebook page in the show notes. But on the other hand, it is very easy to find Kit on Twitter.
My handle is @KitKaren. I will now spell that for you, so there's no mistake or confusion. @KITCAREN. And then either tweet at me directly or by DM, which you can do if you click to follow me. I will always be happy to hear from you with anything that you want to say. And just so you know, criticism is totally okay. But please, nothing salty or mean. Just be nice, and I will be nice to you. So, do we have a deal? Now, listeners, I want you to know that my heart literally skips a beat anytime that I hear from any of you. Mwah.
Hey, everybody, this is Jessica, and if you'd like to contact me about anything at all, you can reach me at xoxojessicaxoxo@gmail.com and on all social media.
Now, moving along. Listeners, if you've made it this far, welcome to the end of the episode.
Aww.
Thank you so much for sticking around and letting us be part of your day, or your evening, or whenever you happen to be listening.
But, regardless of that, thank you again for spending time with us.
And one more thing. Remember, history is no mystery.
Dum, dum, da, dum, dum. La, 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 ba, ba, bum, bum, bum.
This episode was recorded before a live audience of us.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to catch us next time.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode.
Words are living things, full of shades of meaning, full of associations, and what is more, they are apt to change their significance from one generation to the next.